Welcome to the PrivCap Podcast.
In today's episode, Jobus Wellis of RSM and Sam Katz of TZP Group discuss the latest trends in consumer and retail investing.
And now, PrivCap's Matt Malone.
Very happy to be joined today by Sam Katz, Managing Partner of TZP Group, and Jobus Wellis, Chief Economist at RSM. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Matt.
We're going to talk today about the consumer opportunity in private equity. And Joe, I'm wondering if you can start off by talking a little bit about the macro environment, particularly the demand side for consumer goods for the global consumer.
Okay, well, we've seen a fairly strong rebound in the second quarter of 2016 compared to what was very sluggish. First 3 months of the year, where growth in overall household spending really only moved at around 2%. What you're seeing now specifically is a sustained increase in job composition. Of job creation is much better, tilted towards the higher end. You're seeing solid wage growth for the first time in the entire business cycle, of course, amidst very low gasoline prices, which boost overall disposable income. And we're seeing that really across most sectors, with the exception of apparel, and we can get to that later. But it makes me very encouraged about at least the second and third quarter of 2016.
Okay. And in your portfolio, Sam, I mean, how are you seeing that play out, those macro factors? Is it consistent with what the picture Joe's painting?
Well, we're a lower middle market focused firm. And, you know, part of the attraction of that from a private equity perspective is the ability to find businesses that are less correlated to the overall economy. So we have a lot of consumer exposure across the portfolio, but it tends to be, you know, within a very directed thought process. So wellness, for example, is a theme that we have several investments. And so even when consumer spending was weaker, there was, you know, a pretty consistent support for shift of spending towards people taking better care of themselves.
And maybe the health and wellness sort of story plays into this, Joe, but I know I've spoken to you in the past about the consumer numbers and how they may not accurately reflect some of the changes in consumer behavior and taste, and I mean, you know, towards the more experiential rather than the mm-hmm. traditional kind of material goods. Can you talk a little bit about how those numbers may not be reflective really of full demand and sort of where money's being spent?
Okay, well, a couple things. I think the first thing is that you're right that most of what we would consider today to be retail sales is too narrowly defined. What's good is that once you exclude autos and gasoline, retail sales are increasing at a 4% three-month annualized run rate. That's one of the strongest we've seen in the entire business cycle, so that's good. But that doesn't even adequately capture demand for recreation, lodging, travel, the whole broad array of services out there. And even in the areas where it does adequately capture, right, like high-end technical apparel that supports sort of new life events or wellness, the reports aren't going to be picking up a lot of that. You know, what's interesting is that in areas like, say, a big brand, Lululemon, which would support your yoga, right, they have pricing power. During the last holiday season, their initial price set on 85% of their products stuck. You contrast with that, say, a big box operation like Macy's, whose the steep discounting is just undermining their own business model. So you can see the changing composition of demand, both at a micro and a macro level, but you also can see it causing dynamic changes in the overall macro economy itself, which, of course, presents enormous challenges for investors who are not middle market alt investors who expect to get a return or ride the wave of better consumption by purchasing equities of publicly held retail firms who then don't reflect those changes. And I think that's probably the proper way to frame this.
Okay. One thing you mentioned earlier was sort of wage growth.
Yeah.
And for the first time in a long time, seeing
yeah.
some sustained wage growth. Do you see that continuing, and sort of what are the implications then for the consumer side?
Okay, well, there's the two things. The first thing is that we are seeing very strong wage growth. In the employment cost index, or you're looking at average hourly earnings in the monthly labor statistics. What I think is occurring, though, is we've had an overall slowdown in productivity. And I'm going to find it hard to believe that, you know, 12 to 18 months out, that employers are going to be bestowing premiums on workers who aren't generating the productivity returns they need to boost overall revenues, sales, and profits, right? So we're going to get into sort of an interesting situation here as we get near the end of the business cycle. And this is typically what will happen. Second thing is there's a greater discussion right now about what productivity means. Over the last 5 years, productivity is increasing around 0.5% a year. That's far too low. Either the demographic and technological headwinds are such that we've just moved into this long period where we're going to see 1.5% growth a year with probably somewhere between 0.5% and 1% on productivity, or we're totally mismeasuring productivity due to the way in which we're integrating advanced technology in the production process.
Sam, how are you looking at sort of the wage growth story, the business cycle, when it comes to evaluating investments and also managing your current portfolio? I guess where do you see us right now sitting in that, in both the business cycle, but going forward in terms of the how much legs this wage growth has and how long it can be sustained?
Well, my view on the wage growth from our experience is it's like many things when you peel back, you know, an aggregate number, you know, it's parts of different things. So I think we've seen in like IT workers or other skilled workers, you know, consistently higher requirements. They're very portable. And, you know, there's been, I think, consistently, maybe it's greater now, you know, pressure. And I presume in some areas, whether it's manufacturing or other skilled type of work, perhaps in healthcare, again, where there's more scarcity. I think in broader services businesses, we don't hear that as an issue in our portfolio around a different concern about wage growth than it was in the last couple of years. Business cycle wise, I think again it's the benefit of having, you know, folks like Joe to hear from and to always be mindful. I think that you know, we can always try to find again the less correlated companies and investments, but it's very hard to be completely insulated. We're looking at an investment in a company that provides services to the subprime auto finance industry on the basis that we think that there's good organic growth in that company gaining share, but we also like the market dynamics in case there's a downturn in the business cycle. I think what's difficult, I don't envy the role that Joe has, is that, you know, you're trying to correlate these, you know, things that are going on in terms of the length of the business cycle expansion, the curve in terms of interest rates, and against, you know, what happened in the past, because that's normally what you should do. But you're doing it in sort of this unprecedented environment, you know, with a third of the world's sovereign debt trading at, you know, negative interest rates and a non-typical, you know, recovery here over the last 8 years.
You know, with respect to the middle market, we just published our RSM proprietary middle market business index. And, you know, we've run 8 waves. We do this quarterly. And this is the first time in our survey that we've seen a very strong indication that middle market firms plan to pick up the pace on compensation. For the entire survey, we've seen strong intent to hire, but an absolute interest in holding the line on wages. So this is the first time in the 8 quarters we've done this. So A, that's very encouraging. B, I do think that has to do with the labor market remains tight. There's about 1.3 unemployed workers for every job opening. That's down from 7 at the height of the crisis. So at that point, if you're hiring technical, skilled, semi-skilled, or public-facing employees, you're paying a premium.
Given the dynamics at play right now, and mm-hmm. let's exclude that there be a black swan event, which none of us obviously sure. can anticipate, what does the complexion then of the next recession look like when you talk about sustained wage growth or that holding up against the productivity numbers that you talked about earlier?
Okay, so the way economists tend to look at this is that business cycles come to an end due to shocks, typically. They're either endogenous, that's internal, or endogenous, that's the external economy. Let's focus on the endogenous first. My sense is that when we go into recession, it will likely be a garden variety recession. It's going to last 6 to 9 months. It will probably be triggered by an inventory overhang in the auto sector. Right now, we're at peak production. As a matter of fact, we're producing so many cars in the country, it's disrupting the supply chain. The second probability endogenously would be if the Federal Reserve thought that it had fell behind the curve on core inflation and that they hiked rates too steeply in too short of a period of time, and then that would lead to a recession. And then there are some policy uncertainty risk and political risks associated with the election, and this is the first time in many, many years that middle market investors or generalized investors or firm managers have had to take a look at this. And to be honest with you, I now spend way too much of my time paying attention to what's going on in Washington rather than the micro and the macro economy.
So given the overall macro picture, which is understandably complex, Sam, where do you see, and you spoke to some of them already, but where do you see particular opportunities given the dynamics, both in the domestic and the global economy as it relates to consumer companies?
Right. So I think we talk about health and wellness. I think adjacent to that, you know, is leisure spend. You know, I think that, you know, within the, you know, the broad parameters of economic activity, I think if you look back, you know, today relative to 10 years ago and 10 years before that, I think the comfort that the consumer has to divert, you know, a portion of their discretionary spending towards those activities, you know, is more present, and that some of that's demographic with millennials and so forth. So we have one of the investments we have that we made the last year is in a company that runs amusement centers, as well as for their own, as well as in predominantly water parks. And so that's an example of a relatively new category that actually was sort of grew up during the Great Recession. And was very successful because people were taking closer vacations to closer to home. And then even though the sort of broader travel economy has recovered, that segment, there's a lot of investment in these regional type of leisure activities and water parks.
Joe, what particular sectors do you think look, you know, attractive given all of the overall dynamics?
Well, we're near the peak in the equities market. I think that there are going to be some issues in commercial real estate in the large cities, especially like New York, where we've got a lot of supply coming on the market in the next 3 years. So I think until we get to the bottom of the recession, whatever that is, the defensive sectors look the best to me. The consumer cyclical plays, things like that.